because they're the three most populous states to join the Confederacy. Virginia, number one, Tennessee, number two, North Carolina, number three. As a set, as a trio, they have more than half of all the manufacturing capacity of the Confederacy. An inordinate percentage of the top military leaders are going to come from these three states, beginning with Robert E. Lee, Stonewall Jackson, and moving on down through many of the key commanders who served in both the Eastern and the Western theaters. These three states produced more than half of all the food crops of all the Confederate states. They contain nearly half its mules and horses, which are crucial in waging mid-19th century warfare. In other words, these states, these three states of the Upper South that left after Lincoln called for volunteers, are going to be absolutely central to the Confederate war effort. Without them on the side of the Confederacy, it's very difficult to imagine the war lasting 4 years, being as destructive of physical and human resources as it was. It's absolutely unthinkable that the seven deep South states by themselves could have mounted the kind of resistance that the Confederacy would mount over the next 4 years. In recognition of Virginia's centrality, the capital of the Confederacy was moved from Montgomery to Richmond. It made sense on a number of levels. It would cement Virginia's loyalty. It's the biggest city, the most important city in the biggest and most important state that was in the Confederacy, and it also had an enormous array of manufacturing. Richmond by itself had roughly 40% of the manufacturing capacity in the Confederacy, including the famous Tredegar Ironworks that were the most important ironworks in the Confederacy. So it is a huge change in the picture of how the war might go when these three states join the Confederacy. And there's irony here too, especially in Virginia's case, but also in the Upper South states, because during the secession debate, it seemed that there might be a shift in power within these states. The western areas of the states, the states settled later, the states that had fewer slaves than the old eastern parts of the states, the sections of the states that had always looked somewhat askance at politicians from the eastern parts of the states who were in control, had seemed to be making progress toward achieving a realignment of political power in much of the Upper South during the secession crisis. Lincoln's call ended that. Once the call for volunteers went out, support for secession solidified in these three states, the three key states of Virginia and Tennessee and North Carolina, and that process of realignment that had seemed to be in place simply ended. Now, again, this isn't to say that there's unanimity in these states, in the four Upper South states that went, especially the three key ones, because there clearly wasn't, as we'll see not too far down the road in our discussion of the war. We'll see that a huge part of Virginia was disaffected enough so that it would break away and form a new state, the new state of Western Virginia. That's because of the Unionist sentiment there, the unhappiness there with secessionists and the road that Virginia was going down. But enough support, ample support in all of these states coalesced behind secession in response to Lincoln's call for volunteers. And it changed the picture absolutely dramatically. Now we have 11 states in the Confederacy. Now we have a Confederacy that's much larger, poses a much more intimidating potential foe to the United States. Far more resources, far more people. It's just going to be a far more difficult task for Abraham Lincoln and the United States government to deal with this. And not only had these states gone out of the Union, but shots have been fired now. There's actually been shooting. And so the notion that somehow we're going to navigate among all these perilous difficulties and find a peaceful solution to this great crisis is no longer reasonable. That is not going to happen. The war is imminent at this point. It's imminent, and there's no way to get around it in the view of most quite reasonable people on both sides. The question is just how long will it be before serious fighting starts? And we will leave the political side of our discussion here at this point. 11 Confederate states, a war imminent, and next time we will turn to a consideration of the relative strengths and weaknesses of the two contestants. Is one side almost certain to win, or is this really a contest that could go either way?